Welcome to Animal Concerns of Texas, ACT Radio. I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Tom Linney.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also talk about how a meat-based diet impacts the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Robin Raven, author of a new children's book, Santa's First Vegan Christmas. That's a little later on the show, but first some news.
From BBC, free movement between the U.S. and Mexico, the hottest of topics in the 2016 U.S. presidential campaign, is not just a human issue. What would the construction of a wall mean for animals that live near the border? In June 2015, from the lobby of the building that bears his name in Manhattan, the businessman Donald Trump announced his intention to run for the Republican presidential nomination. One of the pledges he made during his announcement was to construct an impenetrable barrier running the length of the U.S. border with Mexico. It would be, Trump said, a great, great wall on our southern border. As the Republican primary progressed, his wall pledge became a literal rallying cry, with supporters shouting, "Build the wall," at public appearances. Trump, of course, subsequently secured the nomination. His wall proposal, symbolizing his position on immigration, has sparked heated debate, but it mainly centers on the wall's economic feasibility, social consequences, and ethics. Very few people have been talking about what it would mean for wildlife. The U.S.-Mexico border region is a delicate ecosystem located between two biomes, with regular animal and bird migrations moving between the north and south of the American continent. It is home to a diverse population of mammals, birds, and plants, including the iconic American roadrunner and the saguaro cactus, the cinematic symbol of the American Southwest. The dry desert ecosystem also supports cougars, desert bighorn sheep, the endangered North American jaguar, and the ocelot, which is down to its last 50 animals in southern Texas. Animals are susceptible to artificial borders of various shapes and sizes, not just walls, but highways, train tracks, and all sorts of man-made infrastructure. Restricting the size of mating pools can decrease genetic diversity, making animals more susceptible to diseases. Human barriers can also disrupt pollination and disturb watersheds and waterways, sometimes leading to floods that can also destroy habitat. There are countless historical examples, including the Antelope Valley in California, where tens of thousands of antelope perished in the late 1880s because they were unable to cross the newly laid railroad tracks. In the U.S.-Mexico border region, a number of species need to cross the border to mate with their genetically different cousins, including the endangered North American jaguar. Black bears, which were reintroduced to Texas in the 1990s, would be threatened without being able to mate with Mexican bears. Dr. Clint Epps, a wildlife biologist at Oregon State University, said species have been crossing the border for 3 to 20 million years, and a physical barrier would fundamentally alter that situation, and that change would have consequences. According to Dr. Epps, that freedom will become even more important as the climate continues to warm and species need to move around to find suitable habitat. A complete barrier could lead to a loss of local species or even to speciation, the creation of new, distinct species as a result of populations being separated. There is already a barrier between the U.S. and Mexico. It is permeable, but distressed animals have already been observed, including the mountain lion and bobcat. Even birds, such as the low-flying pygmy owl and land-loving roadrunner, have been affected. Currently, about 40% of the 2,000-mile border is fenced. Much of this construction has taken place since the Secure Fence Act was passed in 2006. Designed to deter illegal entry into the U.S. and the smuggling of illicit drugs, the boundary is a disjointed but significant series of barriers. In some places, there are impassable fences, but some of the obstacles are designed only to stop vehicles, people, or animals can cross. Sensors monitor incursions and constitute a virtual wall, supplemented by increasingly active border enforcement agency presence and even Minutemen, civilian militias patrolling border areas for illegal entry. It is not just the physical barrier that affects wildlife. Roads have been built for enforcement personnel to access the area, and helicopters and all-terrain vehicles with their lights and sirens are increasingly abundant. Construction of a wall, which Trump has said would be 10 to 20 meters of solid concrete, would mean a substantial increase in human activity, many more roads, heavy machinery, workers' barracks, and waste. It is difficult to be precise about how this would affect the region's wildlife. There is little baseline data, and the border area is increasingly hostile for researchers and conservationists. History also shows the consequences of human barriers can be unpredictable. In the 1950s, 3,000 miles of fencing was put up in southeastern Australia. The so-called dingo fence was designed to prevent wild hogs from attacking farmers' sheep, and it succeeded in doing so. But because the fence also spared kangaroos from dingo predation, there was a massive increase in their numbers, which turned out to be even more problematic for the sheep. Kangaroos are also grazers and compete with the sheep for pasture. Australia also has the world's longest single continuous fence, the rabbit-proof fence, commenced in 1901 and stretching more than 1,000 miles across the country's west. Before it was completed, rabbits escaped into the agricultural areas it was meant to protect, necessitating a second and later a third fence. During the Cold War, East and West Germany were separated by a series of fences, walls, towers with gun turrets, dog runs, and alarms. Designed to keep people separated, this thin 800-mile strip of no-man's land became an unattended nature preserve. After the wall came down, scientists identified dozens of species that had become endangered in Western Germany, thanks to intensive farming and construction. The area has since been incorporated into an important green belt running through Central and Eastern Europe. Perhaps the most famous human barrier of all, the Great Wall of China, has not had a major effect on wildlife movements. Constructed at different times in Chinese history with the intention of protecting agricultural Chinese communities from incursions by nomadic barbarians from the north, the Great Wall is a series of different constructions rather than a single barrier. In many places, it is not, in fact, a wall, but mounds of pounded earth, degraded in many sections by erosion and by locals using building materials and goats. There, it is just a bump on the landscape. In other stretches, however, the wall was indeed built to be completely impenetrable. Just outside Beijing, a team of Chinese scientists conducted a study on plant species on both sides of the wall and found that it was indeed a physical barrier to gene flow. Many historical human barriers had unintended ecological consequences and did not have the benefit of environmental impact studies. Even in recent cases, the environment is often not a priority. In the U.S., the 2006 Secure Fence Act, under the auspices of the Department of Homeland Security, waived a number of environmental laws, including the Endangered Species Act, in order to expedite the extension of the Mexico border fence. From hedgehog tunnels in Holland to koala nets in Australia, major human barriers nowadays are frequently accompanied by land bridges, tunnels, or passing areas. Given, however, that the stated purpose of Trump's wall is to stop the movement of people across the border, it is unlikely to incorporate passing areas for vulnerable large mammals like the desert bighorn sheep. A large and people-proof wall is, inevitably, a major ecological intervention.
The United States Department of Agriculture announced on August 23rd plans to buy approximately 11 million pounds of cheese for $20 million from a stockpile created by falling demand for dairy products. The bailout will be issued by Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, who received a petition from dairy lobbyists asking for $150 million in emergency financial relief. But so far, the USDA has only promised the $20 million. And that's in addition to $11 million in subsidies the USDA paid to dairy producers earlier in August. The USDA has supported the dairy industry with over $5.5 billion in subsidies during the last 20 years. The 11 million pounds of cheese the USDA is buying with our tax dollars will go to soup kitchens, food banks, and to school lunch programs, while reducing a cheese surplus that is at its highest level in 30 years. This might sound like a good thing, but there are many things wrong with this cheese deal, according to the government watchdog group Taxpayers for Common Sense. Joshua Sewall, senior policy analyst for Taxpayers for Common Sense, said, "It's yet another example of USDA caving to the demands of an agricultural special interest wanting taxpayers to foot the bill for lower than desired prices." Reducing the cheese surplus will allow dairy producers to charge consumers more for their products. Dairy producers' revenues have dropped 35% over the past 2 years as the market for dairy alternatives such as soy milk and almond milk continues to grow. And so, politicians to the rescue. A bipartisan group of 61 congressmen, mostly from dairy-rich states like New York, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, are lobbying the Secretary of Agriculture to pour more money into their state's dairy coffers. And we can expect to see more government purchases of excess cheese in the near future. And most troublesome is that this industrial welfare is for a product that is hazardous to people's health. It's been known for years that nations with the highest dairy consumption have the highest rates of bone fractures. Despite what the dairy industry would like us to believe, milk does not build strong bones. Dairy milk is singled out as the biggest dietary cause of osteoporosis because more than any other food, it depletes the finite reserve of bone-making cells in the body. Milk erodes bone-making cells, increasing the risk of osteoporosis. Numerous studies have linked dairy consumption to heart disease, diabetes, autoimmune conditions, and certain cancers, including colon cancer, breast cancer, and prostate cancer. Milk also has the strongest link with ovarian cancer. Those women who drink two or more glasses a day are at double the risk of those who do not consume it at all, according to studies published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. 10 pounds of milk are required to produce 1 pound of cheddar cheese. Antibiotics, herbicides, pesticides, cow hormones, and other toxins are concentrated in cheese. And to keep dairy producers in business, politicians and the USDA are dumping excess cheese into soup kitchens, food banks, and school lunch programs. Some of the most vulnerable members of society, the poor and school children, will be suffering the consequences of dairy price supports, and our tax dollars are paying for it. Stay with us. Coming up next, we feature a conversation with Robin Raven. Robin is the author of a new children's book, Santa's First Vegan Christmas, which was released last June. Robin has written articles for the Huffington Post, the Malibu Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, USA Today, and many other publications. Our conversation with Robin is coming up next on ACT Radio.